What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Save big on everything for your next project now at Menards. Breathe easier with Vestair Ultimate Allergen Air Filters. They trap large airborne particles to keep allergens out of your home, and they last up to 90 days. Save big on all Vestair products at Menards and refresh your home today. View our selection of air filtration products on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer and find great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. And good morning, everybody. Welcome in to another edition of Darren Donick and Chase, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Keep your hands on the steering wheel. Listen to us as you get back out there a little bit at your own pace, being safe. We continue to broadcast from our homes, and we are looking forward to this Friday's show. Willie Donick here with you on the east side. Chase McCabe is with us as well. Just finished up his hour with Ryan to get the day started. And, of course, we'll have Darren McFarlane along here in just a moment.
He's there.
Get him hooked up here. He's ready to roll. Okay. Another excellent show planned for you today on this Friday. The weather's going to be nice and warm, so I know a lot of you will be getting out. So how's everybody doing?
How could you not be good on a day like today? Mid-80s? It's Friday? Hello? Enough said. Other than my equipment not wanting to, my equipment said, you know what, it's the weekend.
I'm off today.
Oh, we're doing this today? Oh, dang.
Because so, we're sitting here and to peel back the curtain, it's all remote. So I'm usually the one that actually connects to Darren, and I'm sitting there going, okay, where is it? And he's texting like, I'm ready, where are you guys? And so technology. But hey, two months of this and... We haven't had a lot of problems.
No,
we'll take it.
Not at all.
We're not complaining about that. It has been it's been very kind these 2+ months. I saw where these. Did you guys see where Scottie Pippen? By the way, last two episodes of The Last Dance will be Sunday night, starting at 8 o'clock. So episodes 9 and 10. Scottie Pippen has not been pleased the way he's been portrayed in The Last Dance.
That doesn't surprise me. I mean, I don't think he's been portrayed poorly, except for moments that he caused. I mean, what are you going to do? So he's mad about last week. That's what I take from that.
Yeah, because right, it does seem like this has surfaced this week after episode 7 and 8, which
like what do you what
did
do you
not
want?
Shed him in the best of light.
He quit. He didn't go in the game.
Well, I would say that the how he handled the injury in episode 1 and 2, that was also something I would think. But I mean, this is your life, right? This is what happened. You can't go back and change what happened 20-something years ago.
Well, apparently, according to him, he wouldn't change anything, even if he could.
Right. So if he said that, then what are you worried about?
That's kind of the way I feel. As I sit here and laugh, I'm like, well, you said you wouldn't change anything. So what? You can't change how people feel. if you would do it all over again, then what are you worried about?
Yeah.
You know, you don't hear Bill Laimbeer go, I regret, you know, that we were the, you know, back in the Pistons days, you know, he doesn't regret his actions and say, I wish people liked us more. He's like, this is what we were and the Nasty Boys and, you know, period. You know, whatever you thought, we were dirty, whatever, we're okay with that. That's how we rolled. And he doesn't regret anything. And so he just lives with it. However, people. Even today, if they still don't like Bill Laimbeer or anybody involved with those Pistons teams, but like Scottie Pippen, like you can't. It's whatever the public feels is how the public feels, man. You don't get to dictate how they feel about you.
But you get to say whatever you want. I mean, that's
right.
The point. Even if you go back and say, "I would have done things differently. I've learned a lot. I've grown up. I have more wisdom now." There's nothing wrong with that. You can feel however you want to feel, but you have your say. And you can't always control what the documentary says about you, right? But he's not the first person to think that he's put in a bad light when a piece comes out. I mean, that's we ask many guests of ours, right, when we have somebody on about a 30 for 30 or something, some sort of documentary is done or a piece is done on them. I mean, it's a common question to ask by the interviewer. How'd you think it turned out? And most people say, well, I think it turned out okay. You know, there might have been some things I wasn't happy with. But that's natural, don't you think? I don't mm-hmm. know that this is some big story.
But and here's my thing, too.
And we're gonna have good perspective on this, by the way. Our first guest at 10:15 is going to have some good info on this.
Yeah,
Howard Beck. This is going to be something you don't want to – if you've enjoyed this piece on Michael Jordan, who hasn't, right, I think you'll enjoy our guest at 10:15.
Yeah, and here's another part of this, too. I mean, and I know we've just seen the last episode, and so this is when he's going to be asked about it. But, I mean, do we think that he probably watched this or at least was given the opportunity to watch this before everybody else? I mean, usually that's how it works. I mean, there's an advanced copy. So, I mean, I don't really know why he's all that surprised.
What does that have to do? I don't understand what that changes.
Well, I mean, do we think that he's watching this with us, or that Scottie Pippen saw this months ago and he's just now saying something?
No, he's reacting because he's been getting bashed. I mean, it's the first thing I did. And, you know, I mean, Marquise knows. He took the phone call. Was, you know, somebody called in, you know, Darren wouldn't say that to Scottie Pippen's face. What? What are you talking about? We say things every day. I've never talked to Scottie Pippen. I mean, so I'm not allowed to say anything if I don't get a chance to interview him.
I can tell you where you can find him this fall.
Yeah, so can I. I know where he'll be too, and I'm okay with him. I love that he listens to the show, and I've met him, and I like him. But you know, I'm allowed to say what I'm allowed to say, and if it's just because you don't like it because your son plays at Vanderbilt, I mean, sorry. I mean, I can't help that. I don't have anything against him. I'm just giving my opinion at the time, just like a lot of people have. And that's the reaction of why he's come out publicly. You know, this stuff has been written because he's been bashed. And I think deservedly so. You can't, as I said on Monday's show, you can't say I apologize to my team. I apologize to everybody. I know it was the wrong thing, and then come out and say, but if I could do it all over again, I would do it again. What? No, that's not what you say. You say, I got caught up in the moment. It was a bad moment. I regret it. I'm sorry. It'll never happen again. I'm a human being. I made a mistake. It's all forgotten. People move on. But then to double, and then to come back and circle back around and say, but I would do it over again, is not the answer.
Well, I think he said, I probably would have done it the same way. And how I took that, and I don't disagree with you, but how I took that is, yeah, I probably would have gotten caught in the same moment. That's how I am. And that was how I took it. Now, I'm not saying that's right, but that's what I felt like he meant.
Well, don't get mad when people don't agree with how you handle it.
Nobody's putting words in his mouth. That's how he chose to answer the question, and that's fine. So
that's fine.
He just has to live with that. That's,
right, but then you have to live with how people react to that. That's just how it works.
Sure. This is I think, I would have to say, this is the most unique circumstances for a documentary like this, right? Every single show across the country is hanging on every word of this thing because of how well it's done. I happened to listen to Jason Stark's podcast last night.
All there is to talk about.
Yeah, well, yeah, because think about this. This is a baseball podcast. Jason Stark, who we know very well, does a podcast every week with Doug Glanville, who's excellent. And they had Bob Costas on. And so what did they talk about? Well, they talked a lot of baseball, but they talked a lot of time about Bob Costas and his perspective on The Last Dance. Right, so this is going way beyond the basketball community that's watching this, and so I can see how you could get sensitive. You are really under the microscope for stuff that happened a generation ago.
Right, but you can always put things, you can ease everything by what you say. And one, to my knowledge, has Scottie been doing? I mean, B.J. Armstrong and we've had a bunch of them on. Sam Smith, people involved in this documentary on the show. Others have been doing tons of rounds of interviews around the country for weeks on end. Has he been doing much? I haven't really
seen
anything, right? Isaiah Thomas, they all come out and been doing interviews around this documentary.
So they've had the opportunity to do as many as they want. That's
right.
Sure.
And he's chosen really not to say anything. So, once again, why? Well, just come out and say, do interviews. Say how you feel. Say, you know, take it however you want. It's your life. But, I mean, just because if you don't handle things a certain way and people call you out on because they don't agree with how you're handling it, and that doesn't mean that I'm right or anybody else is right, but it's our right to say it, and then it's your right. However you want to handle it is your right too, but everybody has to deal with, you know, everybody has to deal with the court of public opinion, and that's what's going on here, and he doesn't like it, and I'm sorry, but that's how a lot of people feel. So what are you doing to change the narrative? Remaining quiet?
Here's my theory. And Marquise points out, I mean, he's on The Jump on ESPN. I mean, he's a part of that show. So he could use that as his platform.
Okay. Has he used it?
No. That's
I haven't seen quotes from Scottie Pippen. Where are the quotes?
Yeah, he hasn't done that. And this is why I think that is. This is why I think he's upset, and this is why I think he's not talking. And I love Scottie Pippen, respect Scottie Pippen, enjoyed him as a part of those teams. But this documentary is just reminding everybody of something that we already knew. He was number two. And I don't think he likes that. Even though that's what it is, that's always going to be the case. But this is just another reminder that, yep, he was number two.
Yeah.
I don't think that's got anything to do with it.
I
disagree.
Okay, why?
You think his whole life he thought he was better than Michael Jordan?
Hasn't he said that before? Hasn't he said something to that effect? No, I think it's a
reminder. I've never heard that.
I don't remember, Chase, I'm not 100%.
What's the shame in that? What's the shame in being just behind Michael Jordan? And also being pretty much unanimously voted on the top 50 players in NBA history?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, where's that being disrespected? I don't get that. I've never heard him say that at all. I just think he's always been sensitive to criticism.
Yeah.
Right on anything. I think that's just how he's wired. And that just makes him a normal person. Everybody has flaws. Bob Costas on the interview I heard with him last night with Jason Stark, he pointed that out. He said, one of the things that's compelling about this documentary is that Michael Jordan lights up all these lights of this amazing character. He's the best at everything. But he's also got these quirks, right? Some that make him great, but also some flaws. But that's really what drives the story. As we were talking about, right? You can do some documentaries on very successful people, but it may not be the most interesting documentary to watch because there's not a lot of spice to it, right? This has so much spice from so many angles. That's what's really separating this documentary. Would you agree? And Scottie Pippen's feelings about this is part of it, right? That's why we're enthralled with this.
Yeah, don't forget the documentary also defended him early on, saying he was grossly underpaid.
And he was.
Yep.
But
he
that's
was.
His own fault,
yeah.
Right? He signed the contract.
Yes,
signed
a guaranteed contract. I mean, it's like, dude, everybody's trying to help you. I mean, what do you want people to say? I mean, I don't think it's about matter of people being against you. I mean, I don't know. I'm a little confused. I think I would probably lean toward, Willie, what you're saying, that's what he's just – when you get down to it, he's just a really, really sensitive guy, and that's okay. I mean, that's, once again, it doesn't make you a bad person. It just means he's really sensitive, you know, unless it's a love fest, and a lot of people are wired that way, and that's okay. I think all of us, to a certain degree, are wired that way, for sure. I would hope. All right, we'll come back. Howard Beck, who's been covering the NBA for a long time, we'll get his thoughts on The Last Dance. And win the league, you know, what is the future of the league? He covers it for the Bleacher Report. We'll do that next on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, looking forward to our next interview. Howard Beck, who's the senior NBA writer for the Bleacher Report and has been covering the league for a long time, and he is on the line with us. Howard, how you doing?
Good morning, guys. Doing well. How are you?
We're doing fantastic. We've talked a lot during quarantine times, like a lot of sports talk shows, about The Last Dance, which has got a lot of attention and have had great ratings on Sunday nights, and they're going into their final two episodes. But we were just talking, Howard, before we brought you on, that this week there's been some stuff written how Scottie Pippen hasn't exactly been pleased with how he's been portrayed, and I'm sure it's because of last Sunday's episode. So what do you make of that, and how do you feel through eight episodes? You know, what's your take to this point?
You know, I mean, we haven't heard Scottie Pippen say this, so and I don't even know where that one came from. That one kind of bubbled up out of nowhere. But the portrayal, and I'm putting that in like air quotes, portrayal. There's no narrator. There's no voice of God in this documentary. It's all people who lived this at the time who are narrating it, including Scottie Pippen himself, including Phil Jackson, including Michael Jordan, including Steve Kerr, and all these guys. And yes, if you want to frame something in a documentary, of course, you can do it that way. But if anybody were to try to, assert that the documentary put Scottie Pippen in a certain light, I would defend the director, Jason Hare, on this one. And I would just say that Scottie Pippen represented himself. Scottie Pippen sat there and said, I have some regrets about not, about refusing to go back in the game when the final play was drawn up for Tony Kukoc instead of me. So he regrets it. He feels bad about it. But in the next breath, he says, and I wouldn't do anything differently. And that's kind of confusing, but that's Scottie Pippen's own words. And everything else about that moment and Scottie's overall place on that team and how he was regarded by teammates, the full spectrum of it is there. His teammates praise him as being a phenomenal teammate and a guy they loved, and that's why they were so shocked and disappointed at that moment. But, I don't think Scottie Pippen comes off badly. I think this is a moment that happened. It happened a long time ago, but it happened. He can't get away from it. He has talked about it. He has owned up to it. And he said he has some regrets, but at the same time, he says he would do it again. So, I don't know where the complaint could be about the quote-unquote portrayal. I mean, it's a similar thing with Jerry Krause. You see the full spectrum there. The documentary makes very clear how savvy, how shrewd of a GM Jerry Krause was and how instrumental he was in creating the roster around Michael Jordan over the course of that decade. And it also shows that the Bulls had, a lot of, contempt for him. The players did, and Phil Jackson did. And they said a lot of not nice things, and they mocked him. And, it's the complete picture. And, again, people have said, it's been unfair to Jerry Krause. Well, Jerry Krause is not alive to defend himself, but others in the documentary certainly spoke to what his positive contributions were, too. So I don't understand if anybody has any issues with, in particular, either of those two portrayals, because I think we saw the full picture. That's an accurate portrayal of these guys.
There's been a lot of people featured in this documentary that have been more than willing to do interviews and talk after these episodes. Why do you think Scottie Pippen really? I unless I've missed it, we were just talking about that earlier. I haven't seen anything from Scottie Pippen. And to your point, you said that at the beginning. Why do you think he's chosen really not to speak on anything of this?
I couldn't tell you. I mean, I'm not in a position to speculate on that. I mean, he's got a recurring, position on ESPN's The Jump with Rachel Nichols, and I'm sure if they wanted to cover it, I mean, I don't know if they have. I mean, I'm not watching every minute of every basketball show or reading every single story, so I could have missed it too. I don't know if he has talked about it. I imagine he has probably, if I had to guess, he sat for a long time for this documentary, and he probably figured that will speak for itself. If he wants to clear anything up, he certainly has every avenue available to him. He works for ESPN.
So through your eyes, what did you see from this Bulls dynasty? What do you remember? We all lived it. I think we're all about the same age, Howard. And so what did you see from that magic around the 2 three-peats through your eyes and what they meant for the game?
I mean, in that era, in that time frame, I'm mostly just a casual fan like anybody else. I was still in California where I grew up. I didn't have a particular NBA team. I grew up in the Bay Area at a time when the Warriors were terrible. So I think like everybody else in the country, I was a de facto Bulls fan because Michael Jordan was just so much fun, so spectacular. Scottie Pippen, I loved Pippen's game. I loved that Phil Jackson was this iconoclast who just did things differently, spoke differently, thought differently. You know, all of that was – everything about the Bulls was just exciting and refreshing and interesting. And I started covering the NBA in 97, 98, the last dance season, but I was covering the Lakers. I was completely immersed in that. So I didn't have any real front row exposure to the Bulls, aside from the two times the Lakers played them that season. So my perceptions of them were almost entirely from the couch, from a fan perspective. And, yeah, I just remembered how much fun they were to watch, and that they were, you know, they were so incredibly dominant. And I know that there is, you know, I'm aware that there is some backlash that some people got sick of them by the end of the 90s or by the end of the run. I don't remember it that way myself much. I remember thinking that everybody, unless you were a hardcore fan of the Sonics or the Blazers or the Lakers or the Celtics or the Pistons, that everybody pretty much became, they were like America's team. That was the team that everybody else was pulling for, because everyone loved watching Michael Jordan. Everyone loved watching him perform.
We're talking to Howard Beck, and we're talking about The Last Dance. And Howard, I think you make a really, really interesting point. Retrospectively, even if you didn't root for them, and I was in the category of I never really rooted for the Bulls, but you couldn't take for granted the spotlight that they just shined on everything, right? I mean, even in a non-NBA town like Nashville, that was compelling television and content for our radio show at the time. And this was before Nashville became a major league sports market. So it was huge. And then after he retired, you realized what an impact he had, you know, what him not being there did to the league there. I heard Bob Costas say the last game of the 98 final is still the highest rated NBA final game or NBA game ever in the history of the league. So that ought to tell you something there.
Yeah, I mean, the Bulls were appointment viewing, and Michael Jordan was the biggest, most popular athlete on Earth, and one of the most popular figures, period, on Earth. And who didn't love Michael Jordan? You know, if you're a Pistons fan, you probably didn't, and if you were some other teams that you know got rolled by him, but. You know, he was so charismatic, and he was, you know, just such a different kind of superstar. And of course, as we know, he's the first who really, you know, transcended the game in terms of the marketing side and everything else. And I don't know if there's much more to say on that, but he was universally popular.
Howard, I know you had a chance on your podcast to talk to the director of The Last Dance. And help me with his last name. Jason, how do you say his last name?
Like the hair on your head.
Okay. All right. I didn't want to butcher it there. So he's under the spotlight, just like everybody involved with this, for how he's put this together. He's gotten a lot of praise, but he has had his share of criticism. So you talked to him about that. So how did he handle that?
Very constructively. I mean, he understands that the spotlight that he is in as the director of this incredible project, that one, there was just the responsibility of being the one charged with this and handling all that old footage that became part of the through line of this thing, all that behind the scenes footage from 97, 98, and the responsibility to, you know, explore not just Jordan, but the Bulls and how that dynasty came together, how it came, you know, how it started to, you know, to fray and then reconstructed along the way, Jordan's departure, Jordan's return. Like, there's so much that he had to tackle in this, but also going in knowing that the footage that became the springboard for this, that behind the scenes stuff that NBA Entertainment shot, it was always done under the understanding that Jordan and the NBA had to both agree on how it was going to be used. And so as a documentarian, Jason Hare goes in knowing, okay, these are my partners on this. And I think people have unfairly kind of extrapolated to say, like, oh, well, Jordan had final cut. Jordan is the one dictating all this. Jordan, I don't believe that's the case. And in my conversation with Jason Hare on my podcast, I think it came through pretty clearly that, you know, yeah, this is the understanding of the usage of this footage, but he's not running everything by Michael Jordan in terms of thumbs up, thumbs down. And he did go in saying, like, we have to tackle some of the issues that are sensitive. whether it was, you know, the death of Michael's father and the stupid conspiracy theories that surrounded that, or, you know, getting into Michael's gambling and getting into his, you know, he answers finally to the Republicans buy sneakers too line and what, you know, what the context was and why he said it and what his thoughts were on being politically active or not, as he chose not to be. And, you know, I think, you know, the people have understandably said, well, you could have done more on this one. You could have gone deeper on this. You could have pressed further. You could have interviewed this guy. Yeah, but it's also a 10-hour documentary, and it had a lot of ground to cover. And there's any number of subplots that could have been, you know, an hour unto themselves. But a lot of these issues, you know, you had 5-6 minutes, and then you got to get to the next thing because they're covering a lot of ground. So, you know, my explanation that I've just given you, I think, is the explanation that I got from Jason Hare on the podcast, which is, you know, that's how he treated it. He tried to hit all the important issues, but there was also a lot to cover. And I don't think he compromised at all.
Yeah, I think that's an important point to emphasize, because I've seen the him quoted in some other articles, too, along those same lines, that he's defended a little bit the Michael Jordan had, quote, the final say. And I do think that's, I guess, twisted or it's somewhat true to a degree, but I thought he worked with that about as well as you can, because, as most people have stated, this doesn't happen unless you're working with Michael Jordan here. And this is still unprecedented because he's never really done his own authorized biography of any kind.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You know, we haven't heard from Michael very often in the years since he retired, or certainly since he retired for good from the Wizards in the early 2000s. And, you know, he doesn't, you know, spend much time in the public eye. He doesn't talk much. And something like this, he's probably only going to do once. And so there were two things that we got out of this documentary that, you know, we've been waiting decades for. One is for Jordan to reflect on all of these things, on himself and those teams and the way that he conducted himself. And that stuff's all new. The interview of Jordan alone in the present day was worth doing. And on top of that, we got the behind the scenes footage that had been sitting, you know, in a crate somewhere next to the Ark of the Covenant from the Indiana Jones movie. So, you know, it's, getting those things in whatever parameters were necessary, I think, is worth the project. And, you know, again, I don't think there's any one area you can point to and say, like, oh, they skipped this part to out of deference to Michael or anything. No, they hit all the most important stuff.
We're talking to Howard Beck from Bleacher Report, talking NBA and The Last Dance. And I'm curious of what you thought about from a couple episodes ago. They did have footage of Kobe Bryant talking about Michael Jordan, and Kobe made the comment that they probably don't win the 5 championships without the advice that Kobe got from Michael. What were your thoughts on those comments and Kobe's praise for MJ?
You know, I covered Kobe from 97 to 2004. And, you know, when I first got on the beat, it was his second year in the league. And at that time, there was still, you know, a lot of this observation of, wow, this, you know, this kid, he plays a lot like Michael. He talks like him. He's got some of his mannerisms. And at that time, Kobe really kind of pushed back at that. He didn't want anybody to think he was trying to be Michael Jordan. He was always trying to certainly play like him. Like, it's the same position. They're about the same size. And of course, he was his idol. And so he relished the chance to learn from him, which you see that in the documentary. You get some clips of that, of how Kobe had asked him for advice along the way. And but he also wanted to carve out his own identity, of course. And what's interesting is that at the end, you know, of Kobe's own run in the NBA, and there was an interview I did with him a few years back where he said, yeah, I stole damn near every move from Michael. Of course I did. And so, you know, by the time he's retiring, he's no longer worried about people saying, oh, you're trying to copy Jordan. But the distinction that Kobe always made, at least to me, and I think this comes through a little bit in the Last Dance too, is that, you know, Michael was the best at what he did and at that position, and Kobe played that position. And so it's not so much that Kobe's trying to be Michael. It's just saying, if this guy does it the best, of course I want to do it the way he does it. So of course I'm going to copy all that. But as Kobe had told me a few years back too, Michael cribbed a lot of his stuff from Jerry West and Dr. J and others that came before. And so Kobe just saw it as a continuum. So it's interesting the way he would interpret the or react to the comparisons early in his career versus later in his career versus retirement. I love the fact that we got some more insight into the Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant friendship, because that was something that even those of us who had been around Kobe during his career didn't realize just how deep that went between them. And I think most of us learned that more from Michael's eulogy back in February, when Michael gave the eulogy at Kobe's memorial. That's the first time we really saw the curtain pulled back on just how close they'd become. And this documentary, The Last Dance, gives us a little bit more of that. And I told Jason Hare, the director, I really wanted even more of that. Like, I wanted to see, I would have watched an hour of just Michael and Kobe talking about their friendship.
Well, yeah, and that kind of leads me to my next question, because I feel like if I know everybody wanted to see this and wanted to see a Michael Jordan-esque documentary that goes a deep dive into his relationships and everything involved with his career. But I know for me, the next one would be Kobe. And obviously, it would be a lot different now because he's no longer with us. But do you think that could come down the pike and maybe we could get more of a deeper dive into the Michael and Kobe relationship?
I don't know. A camera crew followed Kobe and the Lakers his final season in 2015-16. And so I don't know how the family's going to handle all that footage or, you know, who's got the final word on that and whether that will all see the light of day at some point. I don't know if there's anything more, whether it was shot for The Last Dance or for anything else or by the Lakers TV partner, whether there's anything more of Kobe talking about Michael that maybe we haven't seen yet. There's a lot that we would all still love to learn and hear. And unfortunately, you know, we will not get this version, you know, the Kobe version of The Last Dance, you know, 20, 25 years from now, because Kobe is gone. And although we will get other people who, you know, there are plenty of others around who can speak to the Laker dynasty and to Kobe's place in it and all of that, you know, losing his voice obviously is really tough. Losing him, period, is tough. I do hope, selfishly, as a reporter, as a basketball fan, as somebody who followed Kobe's career closely, that at some point down the road here that maybe we'll get to see some of the behind-the-scenes footage that was shot during his final season with the Lakers, and that maybe somebody can build something around that does give us a little bit more new insight into him and his career. It will have some limitations on it, obviously, but I do think there's still more there to tap into because that footage exists somewhere.
Howard, before we let you go, I do want to get your thoughts on what's going to happen in the coming weeks with the NBA. And, there are a lot of different reports. It changes almost every day of, you know, what could happen to get the season resumed. If they get it resumed, do they go to the playoffs? You have Shaq and others saying that they should just scrap the season and focus on next year. So how do you see this going here in the next few weeks with a potential return of the NBA?
Yeah, I make no predictions, and I hate to even guess. Everything is changing constantly, and the league has a lot to weigh. You know, there are, you know, money issues, huge money issues. There's just the competitive issues of just wanting to finish out a season. And there's, of course, all these public safety issues. And it's not just about getting your players back together and playing games and all the logistics involved. It's about the impact that can have just in general, because it's going to require a lot of testing, and we still don't have enough testing in this country for average citizens. So how is, you know, the NBA or any other sports league going to commandeer thousands of tests to pull this off? What happens when somebody tests positive? Do you just keep going? What happens if it spreads? How do you handle their families? I mean, there's just so much, and I don't think we have great answers. I think the NBA has been studying it and trying to map out a plan, obviously, but they're not sharing much of that with the public. We hear leaks and drips and drabs, but I'm not convinced as we sit here today that they've got a solid plan that's safe and viable. If they do, we'll hear about it soon enough, I guess, because the clock is ticking And, you know, eventually the window closes. Eventually you have to decide whether or not there's, you know, whether you can pull it off at all, because eventually you're going to want to start the next season. And I think the only thing I could tell you for sure is that whenever we see the NBA playing again, it will be without fans. And I think even when next season begins, it will probably be without fans. And I think that's going to be sports in general for probably the next 12 months. I mean, according to the experts I've talked to, we should not be expecting fans to be at sporting events until at least the middle of next year.
So do you feel there'll be a champion from the 2019-2020 season crowned?
I don't know. My guess is they'll find a way to do at least that. Whatever that requires, because you don't have to finish off the regular season. You don't have to bring in all 30 teams. If you can limit it to just the playoff teams, now it's only 16 teams that you got to deal with. And you shorten up, you can make it best of three in the first round if you want. You can do anything you want to shorten it up. And if you could compact everything to, only 1 month of playoffs instead of two, and 16 teams that quickly dwindle down to eight after a best of three first round, which you can conclude in less than a week, you can manage the numbers a lot better that way. That's less testing. That's less people quarantined. That's less everything. But that's also sacrificing a lot of TV appearances, TV games, and a lot of money. And it also, may not rub them right in terms of historically. If we've always had best of seven series and we're doing best of three or best of five and suddenly it doesn't feel right, maybe the NBA doesn't have the stomach for that. I don't know. But these are all things that they've got to figure out. But, if I had to guess, I would guess that they will find a way to crown a champion. I don't know exactly how or when, but it's hard to imagine that they wouldn't.
Yeah. Howard, really appreciate the visit. Thank you so much. Continue to be safe, and let's talk down the road. Thanks for doing this.
My pleasure, fellas. Thanks for having me.
All right, that is Howard Beck, senior NBA writer for Bleacher Report, and he also does a podcast, has been covering the league, as you just heard, for a long time. We'll come back and wrap up the first hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase next. We know a lot of you are working from home during this pandemic. You can stream us from anywhere. Download the Game Nashville app. That is an option. You can enable your Alexa skill or Google Home and ask it to play 102.5 The Game, or you can always live stream from our website, which is thegamenashville.com. Appreciate Howard Beck for joining us. Got another great show in store for you. Bo Romanowski will kick off the second hour of the program. We'll also hear Logan Ryan in the second hour, what he had to say this week about his future. Paul Byrd, who is Atlanta Braves analyst for Fox Sports South, will start the third hour of the program. You just made the list. We'll check in with Dr. Peter Cobb and get the latest from him. And then Friday trivia in the final hour of the program. Did you guys see this story on James Harrison saying that Mike Tomlin gave him an envelope after a hit that the hit that he did on the Cleveland Browns wide receiver? What was it? Massaqua back in 2010?
Yep.
And he was fined $75,000 for the hit. And then it was later reduced to $50,000. I guess he appealed it. Massaqua suffered a concussion. There was not a flag thrown in the game. But then Harrison went on to say that the head coach gave him an envelope. I've always wondered, I have always said, I wonder if the players really do pay these fines, And players say, I think it comes out of your check, but I've always wondered, because I've asked players about it. Right. Do you I've always wondered, do they get reimbursed? Somebody sliding them the money back?
Well, especially if it's, one that – I'll use this as an example because it's top of mind. I don't know if you guys remember. This is a NASCAR one. But back in the early 2000s, Jimmy Spencer and Kurt Busch had a feud, an ongoing feud. And at the time, Kurt Busch was this young kid on the circuit and rubbed a lot of the drivers the wrong way. And so they didn't like him. Well, Jimmy Spencer finally had enough, and he reached in the race car and just punched him right in the face. I mean, hit him as hard as he could. And Jimmy Spencer's a big guy. And I think Kurt had to have, like, surgery on his nose. I mean, it was a big deal. And so NASCAR fined him, and I think he got suspended, and it was a pretty massive fine. Well, there were a group of drivers led by Robbie Gordon that paid the fine because they agreed with it. So how much of that stuff happens?
Let me ask the question about Harrison, okay? Because here's where I think it gets a little bit blurry in retrospect, right? Sean Payton had some comments about it, which kind of got the story going a little bit, and yeah. Here we are in this setting, right, where
Harrison's former agent also denied it.
Well, they're going to deny it. Of course they're going to deny it. But the question I'm going to ask is, if a guy gets fined for a hit, right? Guy gets fined, $75,000. And the team thinks it's baloney, this was wrong, and they want to reimburse him on their own. As long as the NFL gets their money, what's wrong with that? Because I think that's a lot different than Bountygate, where Sean Payton is talking about, where you had sort of a preconceived system, supposedly, allegedly, right? And it was on tape, right? You could hear Greg Williams and others talking about it. That was the perception of that. Hey, go out and smoke this guy.
Kill the head.
And there's going to be money for you there. This isn't that. Am I missing something there? This is completely different. This is just the team.
This is just
theory,
a standard fine.
Just
that
saying,
happens,
hey man, I think my guy was just playing the game the right way. He got fined. He was trying to do the right thing here. He wasn't malicious. We didn't tell him to go do it. We disagree with the decision. We're gonna reimburse him there.
And I don't see that
that's really that wrong.
Yeah, I agree.
I feel like this has been. I've always thought that stuff like this, and so I used to ask players how it worked just because I wanted to know the dynamic, and they said it's taken right out of your check. But I've always thought, you know, why, come on, I just found it hard to believe that these players, especially when a lot of times, you know, these hits were a difference maker in a game. I mean, it's something, it was praised in their locker room, right? And yet you're going to take $20,000 away from a guy when the team is praising you for it. That I always felt like, do I think this stuff has been going on for a long time? Absolutely. I do. That's just my opinion. Do I have any proof of it? No. It's just my opinion. It's common sense. Do I think this stuff has been going on? Yeah, I do. Do I think James Harrison, while a lot of people are quick to, you know, say, oh, that's not true, do I think he would just go out there and make up a story about Mike Tomlin sliding him an envelope full of cash to take
of course
care
not.
Of a, no, why would he do
He's
that?
Not making it
why,
up.
Why would he make that up? I mean, that's now, how now ridiculous fair, is that?
It's a fair point to say, hey, did you really need to bring that up, James? What
right.
good
now,
does that
but
do
James
to bring
Harrison
it up?
Though has always been right. That shouldn't surprise you.
And he
no,
looks
not
at
at all.
As, I'm out of the league. I'm done. So
yeah.
It's not going to affect. Gonna,
it's not like James Harrison was a choir boy when he played. No.
Right,
well,
he was a fierce competitor. I mean, he was tough, and he got fined his share of times. Now, this is what I would say, though, is I don't think picking up the tab on a fine should be automatic, right? I think a team, I would hope that a team said, hey, James, I think you're out of line on that. I'm not picking up the tab for that fine. You deserve that one. But I think if they want to support the player and they say in this particular case, yeah, I think that was a little harsh, man. Here's an envelope. I don't think that that's some dastardly thing that a team wants to do, as long as they're doing it for the right reasons. Now, a bounty is a totally different thing. That's why I don't know why these two stories are getting crossed here, and I think they're two separate things.
Dastardly Willie, I'm nice. Right now. If I had a gold star, I would give you one.
It's a good word for
it.
Dastardly,
you.
Man. But ooh, the floor is yours. Take it another minute or two. I'm just going to sit back. Listen, well,
do you
agree? A dastardly in, you get another
minute. Do you agree? It's two separate deals.
A bounty
system is not in retrospect saying, hey, I think that fine was a little harsh.
No, it's just simply, like I said, a lot of times, not all, a lot of times these hits are important. They help. Sometimes they help you win a game, and they are praised in a locker room. After a game, the coach stands up there and always gives the speech, may say, thanks to McCabe for breaking. What a play. What a hit. Whoa. And everybody goes nuts. It's praised. So to your point, What harm is it? I mean, so the NFL gets that money, they give it to, right? All that money goes in a kitty and it goes to charity. Okay, you got your money. What difference does it make? I think this is what you're saying. What difference does it make who essentially pays it, whether it's the organization or whether it's the player? So who cares if somebody's sliding them money for that fine? You got your money. Who cares? I agree with you. I don't think it should matter. Doesn't mean the fines have to go away.
You're not really endorsing head-to-head hits, right? You got to be careful about that. An organization can't come across as, hey, you know, we want you to go out and headhunt. But if you really thought he was wronged in terms of the amount of the fine, which was that's a huge fine. $75,000 is more than your normal thing. A lot of these things are $5,000-$10,000.
Because why? Because he had a history.
Right.
And he got reduced to 50, all the way down to 50,000, which still is a massive, massive fine. Look, you're right. The league could never, ever publicly endorse this, say anything that I'm saying there, or you. No way. It will never happen.
And nor could the team.
Okay, nor could the team. Do you think the league, you think they suspect or they know if this stuff has been going on for a long time? Of course they do. They're looking the other way because, once again, they can't say anything publicly. And they got their money. Well, why would they do an investigation?
Yeah, why should they care at this point?
So somebody, the security guard or somebody, a trainer, somebody puts an envelope under the guy's rug in his car, right? His mat, his floor mat. And there's an envelope full of cash to pay his fine that they took out of his paycheck. It's in a reimbursement. You think the league needs to go investigate that stuff? No. Are they going to? No. Do you think they suspect or know that stuff is going on? Absolutely. Absolutely. This is not the first time this is. I'll ask Bill Romanowski when he comes on.
That's a really good guy to ask because I think he would have good perspective on it because it's a fine line, right? You cannot be sitting there telling your players it's okay to hit other guys in the head and knock them out and all that stuff. You don't want that. And this was, if I'm remembering correctly, this is the period of time where you really started to get an awareness of the concussions and the helmet-to-helmet hits, and the league was really starting to, you know, track those and jump on them. And they didn't throw a flag in the game. And that's what I remember watching that at the time going, how can there not be a flag on that play for helmet to helmet? Now we know today, there's no question, the flags be flying from every direction on a hit like that.
Well, and did you guys see the quote that they used where he's saying, like, listen, on everything I love on my daddy's grave, I hit that man with about 50% of what I had, and had I just hit him because I wanted to hit him to let loose of the ball, if I knew they were going to fine me $75,000, I would have tried to kill him. That's what he said.
Well, he and Troy Polamalu are some of the hardest hitters. That defense through that period of time was fierce. I mean, that was a tough, hard-nosed defense that won games by, you know, delivering that message. When you go over the middle, you got to watch out, right? But the league has changed even since then. In fact, that might be really the last era that you could have defenses like that. Don't you think? I mean, right now, you just can't play defense like that anymore. It's impossible.
Yeah. No, the league, the rules do not allow it. Yeah, the rules don't allow it. But, no.
That was right when they started to change the rules. That's right when they started to crack down on those hits.
You're talking about a reward system. We're talking about just saying, hey, you know.
It happened. It happened. We're going to pick up the tab.
We don't agree with it, you know, but the league's got to do what they got to do. Here's your money back. That's all that is. It's not a reward system. It's not saying go, you know, knock somebody out of a game and you'll get X amount of dollars and there'll be an envelope in your locker. It's not a reward system. It's just simply saying, hey, it happened. We're okay with it. It was a big play, a big moment. Here's your money back. That's all it is.
I would hope Mike Tomlin...
I believe it's been going on for a long, long time.
I agree with you. John McClain used to say it all the time.
Yes.
All the time on our show that would happen as a matter of routine. I would hope, too, that Mike Tomlin would have a conversation somewhere along the line to say, hey, don't get me wrong, try not to hit guys in the head. But I think football people know that when you're trying to be physical, sometimes it just happens, right? Even today, where you know full well, if you come close to hitting the guy in the head, you're going to be, it's going to be looked at, and there's probably going to be flags. You're not going to get the benefit of the doubt. But that, so that's the message, right? If it happens occasionally, you, and you weren't intentional about it. Now, Harrison, as you mentioned, that wasn't the only time that he was accused sort of headhunting, right? You know, Bernard Pollard, we used to have conversations with him about this, right? Those were the defenders who would take chances and try to deliver that hard shot to be a physical player. They were willing to risk a little bit more, and they were good at it, but they got a little reputation, right? Harrison was one that he was fined more than once.
Yeah, he was a really, really good player, but he delivered some massive hits throughout his career, for sure. We'll come back and start the second hour with Bill Romanowski. That is next on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.